webcasting to the world, live, the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, beautiful humans. This is Greg Ambergy. I'm coming to you from the quiet village of Kings Mills, Ohio. And in our Tampa studio tonight is our producer and engineer, Sean O'Halloran. And this is the Glenn Klein Online broadcast. And today is Hump Day, June 3rd, 2009. The only June 3rd, 2009 in the history of humanity, as Glenn says. And it's our pleasure to welcome in, back from the Great White North, he's down in Houston, Texas, the president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Welcome, Mike.
Good evening, Greg. It's good to have you standing in again. Glenn has his parents visiting from out of state, and so and a graduation going on, and all kinds of fun things. So we're going to have a good time here tonight too. Also, yes, I am just back from Canada, and what a trip! Oh my goodness.
The meetings went well.
Oh, geez, there's two brand new series coming out. Everybody better hold on. One, which I did in Calgary, and I've got to wait and hear back from Don. He has the digital recorder now, and he'll download all that, and all the designs are being done and for both series, one done in Calgary, and the title of that series, and we don't know whether it's going to be 4 or 5 CD series, but the title of it is In the Twinkling of an Eye. And
That's the one I have to get.
You gotta hear that one. And the second one, which is 3 or 4 CDs, which was done in Kelowna, British Columbia, another brand new series, entitled Ministry, Bringing Relief. And we did 3 sessions on what ministry is and what the what Paul qualifies ministry as being. And one of the terms for ministry that is translated in the New Testament is the term relief. And that just grabbed my attention, that if you are in ministry, it doesn't make any difference what it's doing. You are in ministry if you're bringing a relief to anyone, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, spiritually. One thing the gospel is supposed to always do is bring a release. And I asked the folks there, I said, you know, if there was a word that could describe as much as it possibly could the totality of what the gospel that you've heard me preach has done for you, I asked them, how many of you would the word relief be one of the best overall terms? And they, everyone raised their hand. They said it was just a relief. And that really is what ministry is. And we went into 2 or 3 full chapters where Paul literally stated that unless you are preaching that the entire world has been reconciled, you are not preaching the ministry of the gospel.
So many times when you hear somebody say they're in ministry or they want to tell you about their ministry, you almost start getting tired immediately because you know they're going to require something of you.
No relief there, is there?
Did you want to add anything else on what happened up there?
No, it was
bring on our first guest.
It was wonderful being with folks there and both in Calgary and Vic Dobrennan, who was at our convention here, and everyone there got to meet him. He's now our new head of Grace Conferences, and what a fantastic job Vic did and helped make that very successful. I am scheduled to go back in October, where we will be recording 7 sessions straight, 7 sessions entitled The Book of Hebrews.
And
it will be chapter 1, verse 1, all the way through chapter 13 through the last So that means I got to travel fast and hard through each session, covering just a little over 2 chapters per session, exactly the same way we did with the book of Galatians. Of course, it's 6 chapters, and we covered it in 3 CDs. And, you know, we lost the first 6 chapters. I taught the first 6 chapters up in Dallas last year, and those were lost on a file, and we cannot retrieve them. And but now the folks in Calgary are going to come prepared to sit through 7 weekend sessions. And I'm going to be prepared to collapse and be carried to my room and fed a cheeseburger after it's all done. So, but that's October.
Yeah, 7 hours is a lot for 2 or 3 days.
Excuse me?
7 hours is a lot for 2 or 3 days.
It most certainly is. Yeah, there will be session time. Four sessions on Saturday. Two morning sessions, an afternoon and an evening session. And then on Sunday, I'll be doing 2 sessions, a morning and an afternoon session, completing that. So 7 sessions from Friday night until Sunday afternoon, I will be doing 7 full sessions covering the entire book of Hebrews. And not long after that, we're going to be scheduling a time and a place. It's not that I have nothing to say. It's finding the time and the place to do it. And but I also want to get the book of Romans done in its totality. All of Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians. So we'll have all of those books done. And just as soon as I can get someplace that'll listen that long, I will be getting them completed.
Well, that's just great. If you're listening in tonight and you'd like to call us live, the number is 800-436-3260. Again, 800-436-3260. And tonight we've decided to dedicate the broadcast to the memory of a good friend of ours. And our first guest, you have to love this guy, even though he's a Steelers fan. Coming to us from from Pennsylvania is our good friend George Howe. George, welcome in tonight.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, my friends. How are you?
Hey, George.
Greg, not only Steelers fan, the Penguins won last night, finally.
I'm not so opposed to the Penguins. We don't have a hockey team, so.
You don't have a football team either in Cincinnati.
Here we go.
Anyway, my friends, how are you?
Doing good here, George. We are going to dedicate this hour to all of our really wonderful friends, Cliff Hazelbaker, and I had the pleasure of meeting him just about 2 years ago. His family will be able to tell me better than I know, but I think it was just about 2 years ago. And what a ride for the family. They are, we all got together there. I think Cliff was the first pastor to invite me to speak at his church in several years. I'm sure his family will be able to tell us a little bit about that visit. And then just a few weeks ago, Cliff was diagnosed with brain tumors that suddenly one day had some slurred speech, and that kind of went away, and the next day he woke up with a headache, and they took him into the doctor, and they told him he had, it wasn't too long after that, they told him he had this 6 weeks to, or 6 months to a year, and goodness, he was gone within just a couple of weeks after that or so. And I talked to him. I was planning a trip to come up and spend some time with he and his family, and they embraced what was happening. And not only are we celebrating Cliff Hazelbaker's life, but I want to celebrate his family.
Yeah.
Nancy, his wife, and his children, And we're inviting all of them to call in. And
by the way, they are calling in. They're probably calling in right now. They're just waiting for me to get off the line.
Well, tell us what you know, George. What was your experience with Cliff Hazelbaker?
The one quick thing I'll relate to is that Cliff taught me about best friends. And it's funny, when he passed, I realized that Cliff was my best friend. And people say, well, George, you only spent a couple of times, maybe three times with him, four times face to face, and you had an online relationship with him. How could he be your best friend? Well, I'll tell you how he could be my best friend, and I didn't realize it until after he passed. The first time that I met Cliff, he's talking about his kids, and he mentioned one of the children. I don't know which one it was. He said, you know, they're my favorite. This one is my favorite. He said, but don't, if you ever meet him, he said, don't tell him. and don't tell the others. I said, oh, okay. So, you know, we're having another conversation later on some other time, you know, in the future from that first time. And he starts talking about another one of his children. And he says, you know, this one is my favorite. And I thought, this is funny. You know, didn't he tell me that the other one was his favorite? I thought, well, you know, maybe he just, I don't know, whatever. So this happened a third time. And the third time I stopped him when he told me this third child was his favorite. I said, Cliff, I said, now, wait a minute. I said, you've told me that each one of your children are your favorite. He says, yeah, they are. Don't tell them. And I realized that everyone, if you were a friend or a brother or a sister or a child or a wife, you were his favorite. And that is the same way that he was my best friend. And the same way you, Greg Amberger, even though I've only met you face to face one time, you're my best friend. And you, Mike Williams, my favorite. And my favorite. And he didn't sit behind people's backs, but it's a running family joke, and I'm sure they'll tell you about it. But Cliff was just an amazing guy. I'm not going to take up a lot of time, but I will say one thing. It was about 2 years ago when, you know, he had Mike come in, and the Bowl Grace team was planning that event, and I told Cliff, I said, Cliff, I said, you know, this will be the end of your pastorate here at this church. He says, oh, no. He said, no. He says, people are ready for this. I said, okay. I said, Mike shut down bigger churches than yours. And it ended up, it didn't shut his church down, but it did cause him to realize, you know, I have to step away from this. And he graciously left that congregation, and he went out and ministered among the masses, which was where I think he was supposed to be all along. And his family will tell you tonight about his short ministering at the hospital, working at the hospital, and how he's touched so many lives. And this guy was just an amazing guy. And I could go on and on about him, but I really want to get off the phone and let his family go.
George, before you go, tell us about your website and how people can go on there and read some of Cliff's writing.
Oh, yeah. Go to www.boldgrace. That's B-O-L-D. GRACE, boldgrace.com. And you can just look through the archives, look through, you know, all of Cliff's writings, look up anything that he's written there. Mindy, his one daughter, Mindy, has been writing a lot of stuff lately. You think she doesn't write that well, but she's definitely got her daddy's genes. She writes it tremendously well. A lot of people, they go to Bold Grace, accuse us of not talking about, quote, Jesus enough. Well, we know that he's in all of all and through all, and we might not just go on there and read, and you'll understand. And I appreciate you guys doing this tonight, because if there was ever a guy that this realm misses, it's Cliff. And I know that he's just on the other side, but boy, I sure wish I could touch him.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, we're celebrating his life and
the other quick thing I did want to tell you is they didn't have a funeral, they had a celebration.
Yes.
And I went out for the celebration. Boy, it was a great time. They didn't have it in the church. They had it at a VFW hall. And you know, there was everybody talked and just had a good time, and it was a party time. And so anyway, I We had that great time. One more quick story. Boy, I'll just take up all the time, but I have to tell you this one real quick. On the way over for the celebration, four of us went over, and we got to talk, and I said, you know, I know that Cliff had been cremated, and I wanted some of his ashes. We have a pig roast here at my house every year, and I wanted some of his ashes to spread at the pig roast. And I didn't know how I was going to ask for some of the ashes, because I knew he had been cremated. So we got to the house and got to talking, and Nancy starts to tell us the story of Cliff's brother got a tattoo artist and got some of Cliff's ashes mixed in the ink, tattooed into their skin.
My goodness.
And so when she said that, I said, well, where are the ashes at? She said, they're downstairs. And she goes, she big smile on her face. She said, you want some? I said, absolutely. And so you really got to meet these people. They went to a craft store and bought little vials for people if they wanted some of Cliff's ashes. It was really neat.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I got his ashes. I got a bottle of his ashes. And we put that pig on there. We're going to spread him in the pig roast. I know Cliff, you know, if we can look back from the next round, I know he's laughing about that, because he was here last year at the pig roast, and I know they had a good time. So anyway, if you come to the pig roast, we're going to spread a few ashes, drink a few beers, and everybody is invited from the listening audience of Living Online. It'll be Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend, okay.
Saturday of Labor Day weekend. And the reason we do it Saturday is, if it rains Saturday, we do it Sunday. If it rains Sunday, we do it Monday.
Okay.
And we might just start Saturday and not finish till Monday. So, we got plenty of room, and we invite everybody to come. So let me get off, gentlemen. I'm sure they're waiting to call in. And thanks a lot, Mike, and for doing this. And
George, thanks for calling in.
Greg, thanks for hosting.
Thanks, George.
I
believe we're going to have to call in. The number is 800-436-3260. Mike, I can tell you that the only interaction I had with Cliff, I came over to Richmond, Indiana, to that meeting that you held there about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I had never, I don't think I've met you in person before. And yeah, I'm sure I didn't, because I remember how shocked I was when I found out how tall you were. But I went over. I had called Cliff a couple times and gotten directions, and I thought, man, what a sweet guy this guy is when I talked to him on the phone. And so I went over, and he was just you met this guy, and 5 minutes later, you felt like you could tell him anything. And he wouldn't judge you. He just seemed like a great guy, and that was the only experience I had with him in person. But it's well, joining us now, Mike, is Cliff's oldest daughter, Tammy. Tammy, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
Great, Mike. You wanna talk to Tammy about Cliff?
Yes, I would. Hi, Tammy. How are you tonight?
Hi, Mike. I'm wonderful. I'm absolutely ecstatic to be here and talk about my dad tonight.
Well, we wanted to do this. I know this is in my heart to do, and I was so happy when I talked to your sister and found out that you guys were excited about doing it, because I really wanted the world to know. This broadcast is not only going out around the world, but it will be archived and as a celebration of the life of your father, Cliff Hazelbaker.
Absolutely.
And we are just, we're thrilled to be able to take the time to do this. And I know that you miss your father. I know that there's been a real roller coaster ride of emotion in going through this, but tell us a little bit about your dad, and I'm particularly interested from a personal standpoint about my first visit there, and because I just found mother and your father in the family. And just, I found it a very unique family, to say the least, that this whole tribe was together, you know. And so tell us some about your dad and just some things that you'd have to share with us.
Well, I tell you, it's so hard to describe to people about my dad, you know, that when they meet our family, they want to come back for more and more and more. And, you know, as the oldest, I'm 38 years old. I've been married 23 years to my high school sweetheart and have two beautiful boys. And what I want people to know, just from being his daughter, his child, his baby girl, that my dad was the greatest man I ever knew. And I know most kids say that about their parents, but I can truly say that after 38 years of life with this man. And as his child, most memories were, we laugh, of torture, the kind that dads dish out but can't take. Dad was good at being the pincher, starting trouble that ended up making him mad. And it was great. We had wonderful family meetings, even though they were held in the hallway while Dad sat on the pot. And then after the meeting, we all got offered Dad's famous brownies, and sometimes with nuts if we were lucky. These are traditions that we uphold as with our own families, and I wouldn't trade them for the world, even though my boys don't quite find the same humor we did. My dad was a singer. He led songs in the church for God only knows how many years. And after singing the same song for probably 40 years, Dad always managed to get everything wrong. He couldn't remember the words to a song he knew for 30 years. You know, he spoke so eloquently when it came to love and humanity and grace and peace in his family. But, you know, he couldn't pronounce ibuprofen. It was ibupropane for as long as we could remember. There are just so many things about my father that I can't even begin to tell people about. But his smile, his heart, his ability to be able to talk to people about love, about, you know, when people talk about, you don't mention Jesus as George did on Bold Grace. Well, Jesus was love, and my dad knew that. So love and Jesus and God, it's all the same. And when Dad was pronounced, we sat at the hospital by his bed, and they told him that it was brain cancer, and he probably wouldn't live. And the first words out of his mouth were, "How long do I have?" And we all sat there, and of course we're emotional, thinking, "My God, it's over. Dad's dying." Dad never once looked at it like that. He looked at his life as he was in utopia the whole time. Dad never shed a tear. We watched him. We took care of him. We bathed him. We did what we needed to do to take care of him. And through the whole thing, he wondered how we were. And he smiled. And he took the hands of every person that walked in the house. He took them by the hands and he gave them his story. He told them that this was the perfect process, that he was happy. He was in utopia. He was ready. And he comforted people instead of people comforting him through that. And we sat by his bed the night he died. And it was just beautiful, Mike. It was absolutely the most beautiful thing. And sad, but that was Dad, you know?
Well, that's the awesome thing about the gospel. You know, I remember my days in the Word of Faith movement, and one of the things I love talking about are talking to your mom and your dad, and of course he passed so quickly. I was planning on coming up and spending some time in the spring, and which is that time's already passed. I would have already been there and back by now, but it was only just about 2-3 weeks. From his diagnosis, wasn't it?
It was. It was. He was diagnosed March 27th, and he passed on April the 16th.
Yeah, that's just amazing. But you know, one of the things in the Word of Faith movement that always struck me so sadly was that the need for trying to confess the word and not say anything negative and not admit what was going on. I think coming from my Word of Faith background, I appreciated what your dad did in his process, and you guys too, what he did for you and for what you guys all did for him, because there wasn't this denial, and you were able to talk. And I mentioned to him when I was talking to him on the phone, you know, that really awesome because you get to say all the things that you wanted to say. And he said, but you know, Mike, he said, that's true, but there's nothing that I haven't said that I need to say.
Absolutely.
I thought, you know, that's as profound as it can get. But
you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right, and that's how we all feel as a family. We've been so close our whole life. We have lived the unconditional love. We've had our trials and tribulations, but we've shared it all, and we've conquered it all, and we've lived it all. And when my father passed, there were no regrets. There was no, I wish had, we should have. Our father and our mother gave us that our whole life. We lived it. We didn't have to, you know, it came natural. It was there. The love, the unconditional love, Jesus, God, it was always there. And so I think that's what allowed us to be able to come to terms with the fact that my dad came to do the job that God gave him, and he did it. And God took him for a different purpose. And we were at peace with that. And it doesn't mean that it's not been hard and painful and hurt, but he touched so many lives that it's unbelievable.
Tammy, could you give us just an idea of I got a feeling that Cliff is one of these guys that kind of understood the gospel in his heart his whole life.
Yeah.
But when did he come to understand it intellectually? And what was that process like?
You know, it's that's funny you ask that, because it seems like my father was always learning something new. And as an adult, it's easier to look back and remember when. But I would say probably I was 16 years old, I think, when I can remember really listening to what my father had to say. And every year, every week, actually, every day, Dad learned something different. He came to understand stuff in the Bible different. He never quite looked at it as most churches do. And I don't know exactly how to express that, but his intellect, his learning, his growing was just amazing. I mean, as kids, we never knew what was coming next with Dad's process, and it was just something we always looked forward to. Our conversations, whether they lasted a minute or an hour, they were just something we loved to sit and listen and talk through. And when we decided to not go to church anymore, our church was held on Sunday morning coffees with Dad and discussing life and learning and listening. It was just amazing. And, you know, there's just no way to pinpoint. He grew and grew and grew, and he just never stopped growing. It was wonderful.
Wow, what a way to live your life.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to keep it. I know I've got brothers and sisters here, and everybody wants to talk, but, you know, I could talk forever about my father. I just could go on and on and on. To look at him, to see his face, that's all you ever had to do, and you saw love. You saw God. It was all there. He was our angel, and he still is. So I'm anxious to see what else my father has to come.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing. Who else is there that would like to talk?
My sister Mindy, my brother Cliff. Mindy's actually sitting right here next to me if you want me to put her
Mindy
on
and we'll talk to her.
Okay,
thanks,
I will do that. Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mindy.
How was your night? Well, this is making it wonderful. I'm so excited.
Well, me too. We're really happy to have you on tonight. We're absolutely thrilled to get to take this time. And, you know, it's amazing. Of course, the grief of the loss of your father is one thing, but all of us share in that with you and your family. But this tonight is a celebration of his life and his existence and just who the man was. I had the pleasure of knowing your father just about 2 years or so. And when he invited me, as one of the only pastors in the last several years that's ever invited me to come and speak at a church, and I remember talking to him, and I, you know, and I even warned him about having me in, that might not be the best thing to do, but you know, your dad was more interested in the truth. The thing that I found very kindred with your father, Mindy, was the reckless abandonment for truth, that the consequences of believing something, or the profit of believing in something, just did not enter into the equation. It was what he was persuaded to be the truth was that was the guiding force. And in that area, specifically in my brief history with your father, we held that completely in common, and he understood me, and I understood your dad when I first met him. I, you know, being a pastor of a church, I wasn't sure, but as I watched after I came there and spoke, and I watched him stand up, and not only did your dad stand up for the gospel, he stood up for me as a friend. And he and your mom both did that in the light of the controversy that ensued after my visit there. So, you know, thank you and your family, too, for what, first off, for what you guys have meant to me personally and your dad also. But share with us about Cliff Hazelbaker, the man you called dad.
Well, he was my best friend, and I have to add to the day that you spoke at the church. I'll never forget coming home and him crying, because what you had given him was affirmation that this message is simple. It is so simple that it's mind-boggling that you could have ever have complicated it, that people out there could actually complicate this message. And when dad got into the internet and he found out that there was this whole world out there of people who felt like he did, he could not stop himself. He was out to get this message because, one, it was so easy to speak about, and he had always believed in it. He had always preached about it. That's what was so weird, was when, you know, his message never really changed. You know, it was just a matter of once he actually announced that this is how he felt, you know, he was abandoned by the people that he had thought, you know, loved and trusted and believed in him. But dad was, he was my spiritual mentor. That was our relationship. He gave me the freedom of, he gave us all the freedom of believing in our own, believing in ourselves, and finding our own message of truth. And so when I was 16 and old enough to drive, he gave me that freedom of seeking out my own churches, and so I did. And I, at the age of 18, completely separated myself from organized religion. And it was the best decision I ever made. I just didn't know really what I was doing. And dad and I kind of found it together. And so our relationship was extremely spiritual. And like I said, he was a mentor. But of course, I always think that I was the favorite. I'm sure everyone else will disagree with that. But what was beautiful during his death, during the whole process, was I never saw that man waver once from his faith. And he actually said to me at one moment that he was excited to find out what was next. And the thing was that I truly believed that he was. He didn't shed a tear. He wasn't afraid. He would make jokes. We had 30 people that would come in at a time every day. And like Tammy said, he would sit down and he'd grab their hand and he'd speak his message one last time. And sometimes they'd walk in and he'd say, $25 to see the dying man. You know, he never lost his sense of humor. And one of the things I'd ask him, you know, was, Dad,
you know, when you see people come in, you know, people that he had gone to church with, and they'd come in to say goodbye to him. You know, I said, Dad, what do you see when you see those people? And he always described it as, I do not see that person, that individual. He said, I see a light and love. And like Tammy said, a utopia. And it was incredible. It was even the very last night when we knew this night was it. He was going to go away. We all stood around him at the bed, and his favorite song came on. And, it was You Raise Me Up by Josh Groban. And as soon as the song came on, Dad's eyes had been rolling back in his head, and he rolled them back down, looked for Mom. We knew it was it. We all grabbed hands and stood around him, and I'll never forget my brother kept telling him, it's okay, Dad. It's beautiful, isn't it? Go on, buddy. We're all okay. We love you. And it was the most peaceful thing I'd ever witnessed in my life. Whatever he was staring into, there was no fear. He truly believed it was a perfect process, and it really was. And I'll never forget it. He was an amazing man.
Yes, for sure. Well, I can certainly concur with that. Just like I said, with my very brief friendship with him, it was like having known him for a lifetime. And, you know, Mindy, that really is the testimony of Cliff Hazelbaker, the testimony of Jesus Christ, the testimony of the gospel. And that is the pure ability to embrace life where it is instead of fighting it. You know,
yeah.
So much of religion is designed to give you a false sense of control over your own circumstances, which we need to understand the amount of responsibility and control we do have. But religion gives that false sense of security, if you will, in
yeah.
self. But in Cliff and dwelt the not only the freedom of the gospel, but the power of the gospel, which causes a man like your father and a family like yours that when a pronouncement like that is made, that, you know, of course anyone would think, you know, well, if there's a miracle available, we would sure be grateful. But at the same time, be able to embrace the process and not standing around, you know, rebuking the devil and trying to fight what is happening. But the gospel really does. Mindy, would you say that the gospel really does help you embrace life where you are and where it is and in relationship to other people?
What it has done for me is literally, you lose judgment.
Yeah.
You lose fear. There is no fear anymore in a God. It's a loving God. It's the source in which I came from and I'll go back to. And that source is pure perfection. I truly believe that, you know, we might not see that perfection in each other, but God does. But when the more and more I get involved into this, I literally look at other human beings, people that had, you know, that walked in the house and wanted to say their goodbyes to my father, people that had hurt him in the church, people that had literally said, we no longer want you here because you're causing trouble. You could literally still look at those people and see love and no judgment and feel sorry for them, that they live in a life of fear of a God that is going to torture them, that, you know, this faith is the most incredible miracle. You know, you talk about miracles. You know, when Dad was diagnosed, you know, there was no cure for this. This was not going to go away. This was going to be the end. This is going to how it was going to end for Dad. And the miracle was all of us asking God, please, please take him now. He doesn't want to live and suffer in pain. You know, that was the miracle, was asking not to change what we could not change, but to give us all the strength to accept that this was happening, and that if it can go fast, let it go fast. And it did. It did. So,
yeah,
you know, it's funny,
Mike,
where you find the miracles.
This is in conflict to a situation that I encountered about a couple months ago. I had a relative who had a long bout with cancer, and at his memorial service, one of my uncles stood up and said he wanted to talk to him about dying, just to see what it was like to be facing death and what it felt like. But his wife wouldn't let anybody talk to him about dying because she believed it was going to be a miracle. And they were doing the word of faith confessing thing. And they never really got to have that experience of saying goodbye like normally would, just because the religion got in the way. But this is a great story, Cindy, about his passing and you guys accepting that and just enjoying the days you had together.
Oh, and we did. We enjoyed every second. I pretty much lived here for those few weeks because he would pucker his lips when I said I had to go back home. He knew how important it was. He knew that his time was short, and he wanted to make sure that we all had as much time together as we possibly could, and we made it great. There was so much laughter. None of us feared anything. I think had he shown any kind of fear, things might have been a little different, but he showed no fear. He was so excited. We got so, no offense to anyone out there listening that came over, but we would get so tired because you just constantly have visitors and you were entertaining. And we all kind of thought, well, you know, we got to do this. We've got to share our father. He's touched so many people. Dad, on the other hand, loved every second of it. He couldn't wait to grab their hands and talk to them because he wanted them to know that this is a beautiful process. It's a perfect process. It's the way it's supposed to happen. So let me share with you to try to take their fears away. And I just thought, you know, even in his dying days, he kept wanting to give, give, give. And if this man can do it, by God, so can I. You know, so can I. I'm going to live every day in knowing that I am loved perfectly. And a God and a Jesus who finished everything at the cross for me, for everybody. There is no one that's picked out. There is no specific person that's chosen that says, no, you're not allowed. You know, Jesus died on the cross for every single one of us. And it was finished there. So live life and love and be happy and celebrate. Because you never know what might happen tomorrow. You could be diagnosed with a brain tumor and have just a few weeks to live.
And Mike, tying into what you talked about earlier, Cliff, it sounds like his life was bringing relief all the way to the end. It was real ministry. It was the ministry of bringing relief to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about earlier, Mindy, we were talking about I just came back from Canada and did two new series there. And the last one was entitled Ministry Bringing Relief. One of the words that translated in the New Testament from the Greek word for ministry is the term relief. And I just didn't go any further. I just stopped right there and I thought, you know what? That's all I want to say about ministry. And took three sessions to just show that, you know, that ministry is any time that you're bringing relief to a person, a situation. And, you know, there's a big difference between somebody walk in a room and take a peaceful situation and turn it bad and somebody who can walk into any situation and bring relief, and not just individually but collectively. And where your dad saw that he could not bring relief, he dismissed himself. And it was just like with the church there. he would have stayed on until his dying breath. But he saw the conflict, and he decided it was no big, it was not, you know, you would think that a man had been there and done what he did for the years that he did, there would be this big grief cross process and all, you know, I'm not going to be able to continue here. But he chose not to stay because he knew he could not bring relief to the situation.
Yeah.
And that's truly what ministry is bringing relief. And if he could not bring the relief, he knew there was no need in staying. And that is wisdom pertaining to ministry in its purest. You know, I go teach about it, and people like your father do it. So we really do love celebrating his life tonight with you guys.
Oh, thank you.
You're listening to the Glenn Klein Online program, and we're remembering our friend Cliff Hazelbaker tonight. We've got some of his family on the phone. Mindy, was there anybody else that wanted to say a word?
Yeah, I think my brother does. Let me put him on the phone. Hold on.
And what's his name?
Hello.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Cliff Hazelbaker, the third.
Oh, this is Cliff Jr. Okay.
Yeah, third one, eh?
This is Greg and Mike at, and tell us a little bit about your dad.
Well, he was a special man. I mean, a lot of people say that they got best friends and fathers that they love in the world, but he truly was, as far as my sisters and myself, he was our best friend. He taught us a lot in this world, and it wasn't just about teaching us to be, you know, fathers and mothers or sisters or brothers, but there's something about him that you just got a special connection with, and I think that's where George and them all relate. And I want to thank all you guys. I mean, Steve, George, Mike, all them guys. I don't know if they truly understand the value of the friendship that they had with them, because as close as our family was, we didn't need friends on the outside, because we were close. But what they gave Dad was that spiritual connection that he hasn't had over the years, because people just didn't understand him. And when he finally found that, boy, it was a joy to watch. And so, you know, I really want to thank those guys for the friendship that it gave him. Because in the end, that faith and that friendship, I think, is what made everything so beautiful and gave him the strength to get through all that. So, I'm not as, I'm an accountant, so I don't speak as good as my sister. So.
Oh, you're doing fine.
Doing just fine.
But yeah, it's been a tough road since. I mean, we have our ups and downs. The comforting thing is knowing where his faith was and ours. And we've been tested a few times. We've had some other tragedies. My wife's sister, my sister-in-law, age of 21, unfortunately, she was murdered less than a month after Dad passed. So just as you start getting through the grieving process of Dad, this tragedy helps. But watching Dad go through that those last couple weeks, I truly believe helped us with this situation, because we knew that my sister-in-law was up there with Dad, and he was holding her in his arms, and it was comforting. But at the same fact, you know, it is hard. And but
well, one thing, Cliff, that I've repeated this several times in the last couple of years, and it's something that I know, and I know the gospel actually helps facilitate this, and that is, with my experience and what I've experienced with other people in this world and with your family, is that we as human beings, with God residing in us and this great treasure inside of us that Paul spoke of that dwells in all human beings, thank God that your father ministered and taught that it's in everyone, not a select few or a believing few, but that dwells in everyone. But one thing that I've come to understand is that we as humans are designed to suffer, endure, and recover from loss. And religion, so many times, tries to interrupt that process by trying to deny that loss is a part of life. Loss of life, loss of finances, loss of relationships, loss as we go along. There's gains and there's losses. And the one thing that nobody told me was that I was perfectly built to handle loss. And I think that's what your father demonstrated so well, was that he was so well adapted and designed to go through loss that he didn't even see it as a loss.
Right.
That he saw it as gain and just going through the process. But religion has a really ugly side to it that sees loss as defeat. It sees loss as a lack of faith. It sees loss as a spiritual failure of some kind. And loss is actually just a part of being human. And but it did something for me very special when I realized by recognizing situations just like what your family's gone through and all of us on this planet that have suffered loss. But we're built for that. Loss is not a stranger to the heart. And the heart that where Christ lives, which is in every heart, if we can embrace that oneness of this humanity, it is so amazing how much differently we deal and cope with and endure and recover from loss. But I am absolutely convinced we're all built to go through this process and as just the same way that your dad did, or even with your family suffering the loss of someone through a murder. My goodness, I mean, what do you do with that? But knowing that loss is a part of life. Life isn't always making gains, whether it's financial or a new birth, somebody being born into the family, running that extra mile. Sometimes you get hurt and you can't run even the mile you normally do. Sometimes there's loss financially and in every other way. And then there's that point that comes in life. Aware that the one thing that we see as loss, and that is losing someone, which it is a loss. You've lost a very wonderful friend and father, but it is amazing. I know that you have found the ability to deal with this, even though, like you said, it is up and down, it's a roller coaster ride. But
yeah,
the one thing that your father left you with is knowing that you could handle this loss.
Yeah, and this is the stuff we miss, because going through situations like this, he's the one that we would call up for this exact same type of conversations and advice. And you know, one of the things that me and my sisters and my mom talk about all the time is we can go into our heads and we can have that conversation with him anytime we want, because we know the advice he's going to tell us. We've had so many conversations over the years that we know it. The hard thing is, unfortunately, we just don't get to hear his voice, but it is comforting. I still every day pick up my phone to go to call him and then realize, okay, you know, we've got to have this conversation in our head because, you know, he's not around. But that is the nice thing about our family, is we know each other so well. We spend so much time with him and with each other that we're close and we're getting through this together, and we can still have those conversations with Dad. And, you know, we actually get to have more, because since we don't have the ability to call him up or talk to him, we're able to go into our minds and have these conversations more often than we normally would. So, but, you know, this is what we miss, and because, you know, we wish that he could be here to enjoy this conversation about him, you know, that we don't get to do. But we sure appreciate you guys doing this. It does mean an extreme amount to our family, because we want everybody to know who our father was and how important he was to us and what he meant to everybody that he touched. So,
well, he certainly meant a lot to us. If you didn't know Cliff Hazel Baker and you
like to read some of the things that he wrote, you can go to boldgrace.com and click on Cliff. And a lot of his writings are there, and they'll continue to be there for many, many years, helping people to understand love and understand the love that our Father God has for us and displayed in Jesus Christ. We've got about 5 more minutes, Mike. Why don't you just take us down the home stretch and wrap all this up for us.
Well, Cliff, thank you for calling in. Are you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm still here, and thank you, Mike.
Yes, and tell your family that we love them all, and we loved your dad with a really wonderful love, and I know that he loved me.
Oh, absolutely.
And I treasure the last conversation that I had with him when I called to offer some comfort and support, and I wound up being comforted and supported.
Appreciate it, and you can look forward to some calls from us when we need to get a little more advice and want to hear Dad's voice. We know we can come to you for the same type of advice, so we appreciate it.
Well, I feel honored that you'd even say that or consider it, and do consider that I'll be here at any time, and I will, I'll do my level best.
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, love you guys.
Love you too.
Mike, it's
well,
amazing.
Well, this has been our evening for celebrating the life of Cliff Hazelbaker and doing that with his family, and I know that everyone has enjoyed this, Greg. It really is amazing. There's a whole lot of things when people come into understanding the gospel that things change, the way you view things, the way you understand life, the way you deal with life, the way you deal with loss, the way you deal with death, the way you deal with setbacks, the way you deal with every aspect of life literally changes in the light of the gospel that Cliff shared with the world. And I was always delighted to know that he was my partner in the gospel. And we had some wonderful conversations for sure. But I think that this is a fantastic time, and I to all of Cliff's family, I want to say thank you for sharing in this and letting us celebrate your father's life here live on this Gospel Revolution broadcast. Because we want to talk about the things that are important, and death is one of those things. And many people realize in the embracing of the gospel, that the gospel doesn't separate you from the losses of this life, but it sure changes how you deal with the losses and the ability to process those losses. And as you've heard from his family, the one thing that you could not possibly hear is the amount of grief that they've gone through and the sadness from not being able to pick up the phone and call the dad. But I hope everyone noticed how that this transition has just simply placed them in a different mindset with their father. Not a dad dead and gone. It is just a different way in which they communicate and that they relate to him now, because their father will always be alive in their hearts and minds, and then the children and his grandchildren and his wife and all of those that he spoke with and touched through his own ministry in his own life of bringing relief to people's lives. And Greg, we've only got just a few seconds left, and I want to encourage everybody to make an effort every day of your life. And yes, I did use the word effort. make an effort to bring relief to some situation, to someone's life, to someone's heart, to someone's mind. And you believe me, Cliff Hazelbaker is a testament to the fact that you will not regret doing that and going out of your way to spread that little bit of extra kindness, and to minister. A lot of people, we put that term ministry in such a religious aspect that we don't realize that all you have to do is bring relief to a burdened moment, to a heart that is going through a tough time, or a helping hand to someone who needs to take that next step. And you are a minister. You are a minister. And we are intending on continuing the ministry of the gospel that Cliff was so much a part of here with Mike Williams' ministry, Gospel Revolution. And we are grateful for the life of Cliff Hazelbaker and the time that we had with him.
We certainly are. This is the Gospel Revolution radio broadcast. We thank everybody for listening in tonight. We will be back next Wednesday at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Until then, shalom, everybody.